if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 297. This is our 2024 Valspar Championship and Porsche Singapore Classic Bets Pod. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss our selection for this week's PGA and DP World Tour action. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Please subscribe to this podcast as you drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous Golf Betting System website where we have in-depth betting previews across both events. We've got strokes gained rankings, player form statistics, plus, of course, predictor models for both events. All of that content is completely free of charge. We have no paywall at Golf Betting System. On X, Barry's at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available, along with my weekly golf betting show. As I say now at the start of every week, if you are listening or watching this podcast on YouTube, please press that like button. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. This one's from Captain Nemo. And Captain Nemo's in New Hampshire, the United States of America. Nice spot. Nice spot on the planet. Entitled, Golf and a Pint, 5 stars. Hey, gents. It's Captain Nemo here from New Hampshire. His name's actually Trevor, but he's also known as Captain Nemo. Answering the 5-star call. Apologies for the delay. My review and sincere thank you has been long overdue. Your podcast first reached my ears last year before the PGA Championship. Thanks again for the Brooks Outright tip. And since then, it's the first golf betting podcast I listen to each week. You three bring a refreshing approach to betting golf that promotes the joy and entertainment of the experience. Thanks again for all the free content, insight, and most importantly, humour. If you ever find yourself stateside in New Hampshire, the first round of golf and pints are on me. Cheers. Thank you. That's Trevor from New Hampshire.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you, Trevor, Captain Nemo, for your kind words. And yeah, I guess if we're ever over in that neck of the woods, chaps, we'll nip in for a beer.
Yeah, just get in the golf carts and have some beers while we're playing golf.
Yeah, combine the two.
And you two can just ride in the golf cart and not play golf, which probably make you happier.
Yeah, you've seen our game, Barry.
Well, to be fair, Paul could take the... He could drive the ball, and then I'll do sort of the putting and the chipping. They're each other's weaknesses. Although Paul does like a... You don't mind a hook, do you, mate? Or was it a slice? Or was it both?
A bit of both, yeah. Put plenty of balls in the bag and jobs are good.
True. If you are, by the way, if you're listening on Spotify, don't hesitate in pressing that 5-star button. So go to the homepage for the podcast. There's a star rating there. Just literally put your finger on it. It will come up. Do you want 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? Make sure you press 5. Job done. Simple as that on Spotify. If you could send us in some more reviews, we are starting to run a little bit short, so reviews would be much appreciated. It's one of those rare podcasts where I actually snagged a winner. So, you know, I don't like it when I talk about winners. They are very infrequent, but it wasn't just the fact that I won last week at the Players, which, by the way, is the first time since we started the golf betting system website It's the first time since 2009 that I've ever had the winner of the players. And I can hear people already moaning and groaning. Yeah, but you put up Scotty Scheffler, Steve. It's not much, really, of a shout, is it? The fact that you tipped up the favourite and he won. But the thing that really pleased me last week was the fact that I had Harmon in contention. And while I'm sitting there watching it, just Hideki just keeps chipping away. Hideki just keeps making those birdies required to get a nice full each way payout as well. So I was very pleased with last week. I thought it was stressless, really, because I had players in the mix for once, and they weren't doing a Sam Burns and triple bogey in the first hole on a Sunday. Mm. It was strangely stressless, which you don't tend to get on a Sunday. So I did appreciate it as it was happening, because it doesn't happen very often.
That's not your default setting either. So I'd say stressless felt really uncomfortable, just squirming on the squirming on the couch watching this all unfold. Mm. Those were some great picking last week, Steve. Like,
thank
you. Really, really awesome. I'm an idiot for not picking Scheffler. I had a mind virus last week, a proper virus. So I can blame it on that. No. But like Scheffler was amazing, and it took a neck injury to keep him a bit tighter to everybody else. Do you think he probably would have been a few shots clear? Maybe.
Maybe.
I wouldn't have thought he wouldn't have been five back from Clark at the halfway stage, would he?
No.
He was more than that, wasn't he? Was it seven?
Six, I think. Yeah, it was that Friday round, six, which was a bit flat, wasn't it? Where he was really struggling. But
Scheffler might be AI. I think that's what I'm starting to think. Like, he might be just AI for golf and just manifested into this machine. He's so good.
Yeah, different.
He
level,
seems to be developing a new characteristic, though, doesn't he? He seems to be getting this real determined. I haven't seen anything like this for quite a long while.
It's the power of the beard.
It's nothing ruffles him. You know, he makes a birdie. It's as if he's made a bogey. It's just so focused. It does... I know you shouldn't use the terminology. It does remove... It is a bit Tiger-esque to a certain extent.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Particularly the ball strike.
Let's go through the statistics. I know you also, Barry, you want to mention just about the event and the course conditions. So chivvy in when I've stopped you, Barry. If you look at what Scotty Scheffler was up against last week, let's stack it all up, right? No player in the 50-year history of the Players had ever defended the title. And that shows what a brilliant design TPC Sawgrass is. Only a handful had started on the Thursday on the PM side of the draw and won. So he went PM, AM. And it was some ridiculous number. I think it was 13 of the last 15 had won off of AM, PM on the T-splits. So you think about that. Mm. He was given a boost by Bet365. I mean, that is the biggest black ball known to man, isn't it? When you're getting the player boost with Bet365. And then, of course, he goes out there on Friday after a reasonably strong, you know, your typical Scotty Scheffler Thursday when he puts himself just at the bottom end of the top 10. Goes out there, birdies the first. Fantastic. Gets to the second and all of a sudden his neck goes. Now, Paul and I were unaware of this. We were having a few drinks in London celebrating the Cheltenham Gold Cup Friday. So Paul's constantly doing what he always does, which is every 30 seconds looking at the leaderboard on the PGA Tour app. And he's, oh, don't worry, Steve. You know, he's always birded this and he's in the fairway here. But none of us actually knew, neither of us knew, that he'd actually hurt himself. No. That all came out later on. So he's got all of these problems. Bearing in mind, he said during the interviews, there were points on Friday when I could have just simply walked off the golf course. I was in that much pain and discomfort. See, these things that were stacked up against him were monumental. Mm. And he how many shots back was he on the start of Sunday? I think he was six back?
Five. I think he went five.
Five.
Six into the weekend, five.
17 were Clark and Sander, and he was at 12. That correct?
Mm. Yep.
Yeah. It's just, what that guy did there was just an unbelievable, and it had my money on him. I mean, That's the biggest black ball of the lot. And he still wins. What are we seeing here? Question for you two. Do you think 5-1 Scotty Scheffler to win the Masters is a good bet? Because that's what we're looking at right now. And that price isn't going to get much bigger, is it? If at all.
Well, no. You might get some specials on the week itself, but that's about it.
Paul, is that a good bet?
Is it a good bet? I'll just go back to the same equation before. If you put Scotty Scheffler at the Masters right now in his current form, does he win it one in five times or more than one in five times? I suspect he does. And on that basis, 5-1 is the right number or a backable number.
He probably wins a close to two times out of those five. It's going to take an unbelievable week from somebody else right now to beat him in anything. It's just incredible. He seems to hit better shots the more the pressure is on. I mean, just around that stretch, 11, 12, there at the Players, where he just knocks the driver onto the green, like on a hole that's just eating up golf balls, and you miss that like one quarter of a degree left with the wrong kind of trajectory and approach angle of the ball, it's gone.
Yeah.
But for those stupid collars as well, but like that's another side topic, or should be a main topic as well. But he just gets better and better the more the pressure comes on, and there's nobody else out there that seems to do it at that level, at least on the PGA Tour. Ram might be the closest one to be able to replicate that style, but it's he might be the only bet for the Masters.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be plenty who go down that route of just having a, you know, all eggs, one basket, and see if Scotty does it again. But it's a brave man who bets against him right now.
Yeah. And look, if he did back him for the Masters and for some wild reason he tanks, then what, you get to put some bets on and running or just enjoy the tournament from the couch? So,
Well, this is it. Yeah, but that's the thing, Barry. It's not as if you can't have your sort of 4 points or whatever your stake, divvy up your stake, and you just cover off Scheffler. I mean, cover him off. You've still got points in the bank where you can back some decent juicy each way, or players in that mid-range like a Matsuyama or someone that you fancy as Zalatoris, whatever that player is going to be. You don't have to just load everything onto Scheffler. Clearly, if you're backing Scheffler, you're not going to be backing a McIlroy or one of these guys that's your 14, 16 to 1, your typical Jordan Spieth price, a 16 to 1. But you can be going far deeper in that market. That juicy, we know that at the Masters, that juicy 28 to 4 to 50 range where you do get quite a few winners.
Yep.
You can still get very much involved with that.
It does happen.
I just think that was sheer bloody mindedness that won that tournament and sheer determination.
Yeah.
And he's the most humble guy you'll ever meet. Unbelievable.
And the other guy, the Xanders and the Clarks and even the Harmons would be disappointed not to have won that, because they all had their chances to do that. And Clark as well made a lot of mistakes or missed chances all the way up until the end, and yet he still had that chance on the final hole, the final putt that did the 360 to you know, well, that would have made it a hell of a lot more stressful for you, Steve, had that putt gone in. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
Who?
Barry, the course. Have a minute on it.
Oh, God. A long minute. It's just, they got a great result, okay? And Sunday was really exciting. I backed Fitzy over the weekend, and I thought, oh, great, he'll get himself in contention. Starts at two birdies on Sunday and then hits the eject button and then does a beautiful non-competitive top five surge at the end. So I got to just sit there and enjoy watching it, and it was really exciting, really enjoyable. But it kind of annoys me in a way that they got that like tight finish, because the course was set up in a... The course was obviously watered throughout the week, and knowing how Sawgrass can play when it's got a little bit of pop and bite and fizz to it, it kind of took away like a percentage of what that place could be and how it could be entertaining. So it's just, I mean, is 20 under a full player's a challenge? I don't know.
No.
And it's such a fine balance as well, because if they put like 1/10 of a milliliter less water on the course, the whole thing could go to shit. So it's like they really do like teeter on the edge, but felt like they went a bit too far. And if watering courses and keeping them soft is the thing they think is going to keep some players from jumping to live, like that's it's a bit of a tenuous thing to lean on. Like overall, like really exciting tournament to watch. It felt like the players, it felt like a big deal, and that was great. Got a great finish on Sunday. But can some tournament on the PGA Tour please decide to differentiate itself from the rest by just presenting a slightly different challenge, except for this dartboard shit each week?
Yeah, just because a bit of a challenge, please.
Because what it does is, it allows players their skill sets to shine better on a given week. Like, yes, you got some really good players at the top of the leaderboard, and the best player in the world won last week. But I've kind of lost for words because I'm a little bit annoyed, because there's just, it's the same thing all the time. Just somebody set up their course a little bit different with some firm and fast conditions.
Perhaps we'll get it this week, Barry. Perhaps Copperhead will be the saviour for us.
Oh, I mean, Steve's saying it's going to rain there, so that's not going to happen. they're going to be playing ball in hand before they even tee off the first round.
I guarantee they're playing lift, clean and place on Thursday, because they know the rain's coming Friday.
Absolutely. And I bet the place will be like it might be ripping fast on Thursday. It's like, yeah, but it might rain, so we're going to play lift, clean and place.
Yep. Just for background, Barry, 16, 14, 13 under par. We know that Scheffler won 2023 at 17 under. The next best was 12. And then this year, 20 under. And there was a clump of them, wasn't it? 20, 19s, 17s. So, yeah. Also, that they'd moved the rough closer to the greens, and they'd also they'd lessened a lot more of those sort of roll-off areas, so that the balls were being held on the collars closer to the greens.
Just crazy. So,
like, just between the rough and the apron.
If they just dealt with that and just gave a bit more runoff areas, and those stupid collars, like on 17 and 12, or is it? Yeah, those collars.
Yeah, 12. Where Xander drove it on Sunday. Yeah, through the back.
Spin control is part of the test and the questions you're being asked in the exam, and the amount of balls that were held up on 17 for that front pin location, because of that collar rough, they should have been all spinning back into the water.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah.
That's exciting as well. You know, balls going in the water. And if you've spun your ball too much, you've hit a poor shot.
Yep.
I know the wind was down, but they didn't even make double digits, did they, on balls in the water on 17?
It was way down, way down. But as Barry described, some of the penalty for different types of bad shots.
Yeah.
Just wasn't there.
There was none. There were like bumpers. It was like bowling with bumpers on. I don't know.
Good analogy. We are moving, though. We're moving to Copperhead this week on the PGA Tour, chaps. The Innisbrook Resort, the Copperhead course. This is typically a tough event. We are looking at something around the sort of 10 under being a competitive score. However, there's two Sam Burns victories here at 17 under par, 2021 and 2022. And guess what? That was when the course was nice and soft. So, if the PGA Tour have been on the line and said, oh, but it has been damp. I mean, we know this. Florida has. It's been a ridiculously unusual wet winter into early spring in Florida. That's just genuine. So a lot of these courses have had a precipitation on them that have been far more than they usually get. One thing that might save us this week, though, Barry, is there is plenty of wind in the forecast. Let's quickly go through the course. Larry Packard 70-1 original. It was renovated in 2015 after Jordan Spieth won here. So I basically take away all of the data pre-2016. This golf course is, I classify as technical because usually it is that 10 to 12 under par winning here. I mean, I remember some years Casey won here at single digits. Can you believe that? Mm. A single digit winning score on the PGA Tour, Paul.
Yeah.
Barry. 8 under par. Wow. It was allowed then. It's medium in length. It is 7,340 yards. It is a par 71, but it's a bit of a weird par 71 in the fact that it still has 4 par 5s and it has 5 par 3s. So less par 4s than standard. Holes with water hazards in play. Only 9 this week, rather than the ubiquitous 15 to 18 that we've seen over the last few weeks in on the Florida golf courses. But, Steve, this is in Florida, I hear you shout. Yeah, it is. It's in northwest Florida. But I actually classify this golf course as a Carolina golf course. Quite a few undulation changes, plenty of dog legs, and trees in play pretty much on every hole. So, to me, it's very similar to a Harbortown, but a little bit longer. It's similar to a Sedgefield, and there is a lot of carryover with results from Sedgefield and here. And you could even throw in there, although Quail Hollow is a monster, it's that kind of tree-lined, parkland, undulating golf course. And in this case this week, again, Celebration Bermuda grass, overseeded again with rye grass, Barry, you'll be pleased to hear, both on the fairways and the rough, and we've got Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass with Poa Trivialis overseed again on the greens. The greens themselves, just under 6,000 square feet. So they're not huge, but they're not tiny either. And for that length of course, they're pretty difficult to hit. You do get, when you look at this tournament, some very low greens in regulation numbers. So, you know, if you're hitting 70% of putting surfaces this week, you are going to be close to the top of that particular category. Which always interests me, because as soon as you start saying things like that, your Matthew Fitzpatricks, your Jordan Spieths, they've got a great history on this golf course. Players that have got phenomenal short games and can make plenty of putts, you start seeing lots of those names start bubbling towards the top of leaderboards here. I think the differential fact this week is, chaps, forget about turf conditions, and yes, I genuinely think they're probably... I think there was rain there on Tournament Monday yesterday. I haven't verified that first thing this morning, but it was really 70% forecast of rain Monday night. Tuesday looks clean. Wednesday looks clean. Thursday looks clean. Also, Thursday looks particularly calm here. I'm just looking at the weather forecast as I'm chatting here. Maybe 10 to 15, so not completely benign, but there'll be a breeze. But put it this way, Thursday's going to be your scoring day. Get yourself in position. Friday looks, wow, difficult to say. Rain throughout, gusting up to 35 miles an hour. And interestingly enough, that rain, which yesterday had a lot of thunder activity within it, the electrical activity doesn't seem to be happening. I mean, I'm recording this on Tuesday, full disclosure. It could be that those thunderstorms don't hit until sort of late on Friday, even after play. Mm. So it's whether that course can take that rain. Shock horror, Barry, we might have a situation where PGA Tour stars are forced to play in the rain.
It's the Open Championship at Copperhead.
Wow. Saturday looks windy. Sunday looks windy. So you're going to want a good wind player this week. There's at least 54 holes this week where it's been going to be gusting over 20 miles an hour. So I still think you're not going to get a 17 under winning this year. I think it's going to be closer. Gut feels kind of 13. Mm. I reckon if you're luck at 9 under, you're going to be right in the hunt for some each way money, which is good. That's what you know. Something that's slightly different.
Yep. Let's hope so.
Any thoughts on Valspar? Any thoughts on the course before we move on into potential selections? Anything you can remember about the course, chaps?
No, only that it is historically something that does present a challenge. And as you say, single digits in the past has been good enough to win some of these events. So a different kind of mentality to the style of golfer, potentially grinders and kind of more those players who can make pars rather than birdies tends to be the way that I approach this.
I don't think bogey avoidance is a bad stat this week.
No.
I mean, when you see Jim Furyk winning here,
yes.
It tends to start painting a picture, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
When I look at the strokes gain data here, going back to Charles Schwartzel in 2016, this is the positions of the champions here and average them through. Off the tee, 33rd, clearly not important. In fact, that is the joint weakest we've seen on tour since Kapalua. So since the start of the year, 33rd for off the tee. Here's the crux. 6th on approach, 19th around the green. What were we saying? Matthew Fitzpatrick, Jordan Spieth, approach and around the green. Tee to green 4th, but most of that tee to green made up of approach and around the green rather than power off the tee. The differential here to what we saw last week, because those numbers are very similar to Sawgrass, the differential here is you've got to have a good week putting. Now, before last week, and it won't have changed because I think Scotty gained about a quarter of a stroke on the greens each day. It was 34th for the winners at Sawgrass. But that also included, of course, that Cam Smith year when he was basically the best for strokes gained putting by about 14 strokes. So putting last week wasn't important historically for the winner. And it will still be the same next year with Scheffler's win. Here, strokes gained putting of the winner, 13th. So 4th for tee to green and 13th for putting. So team no putt. You're going to have to catch a week where these guys can actually putt. And that makes it even more onerous. Actually, if you look at traditional stats here, to the same, going back to Schwartzel's victory. So when I say traditional stats, I mean, you know, your accuracy, your greens in regulation. The one number that stands out over any other putting average, putts per GIR, the winners here, going back to Schwartzel in 16, 6th in the field.
Mm.
Wow. So I think there's a number in here. There's a number for players that can actually make putts from 5 to 10 feet because you can't afford 3 putts and there's going to be a lot of testing 5 to 10 footers here for par, especially with that wind blowing. So that's something I actually built into the equation. Now, bearing in mind, strokes gained approach this week is very, very important. I thought, because I'm such a nice chap, I'd just throw out there names that were in the top 25 and in this field this week at the Players last week. So these were guys that were in the top 25 for strokes gained approach last week at Sawgrass. Right, Nick Taylor, Dylan Wu, Andrew Putnam, Sepp Straka, Barry, I know that you will be, Alex Smalley, Joel Damon, Ryan Moore, Grayson Sigg, Cam Young, Christian Bezuidenhout, Brian Harman. And I know he missed the cut, but actually, if you look at the raw numbers, Justin Thomas was first for strokes gained on approach over the first 36 holes of the golf tournament. Just couldn't putt for toffee or do anything else. Mm. The approach play is definitely still there for JT. Right. I'm going to throw this one at you as well. And I know this is the kind of thing that I do for various tournaments each year. And then you get a lot of comments back saying, how can you pick players on the basis that they didn't do well the week before, Steve? Right. I'm taking you through the winners of tournaments the week after the players. And I'm going all the way back to Sergio Garcia. He won the Byron Nelson and he'd finished 54th at the players. Horschel, miscut. Aaron Wise did not play. Paul Casey missed the cut at the players. Matt Jones, he won the Honda Classic when that was played the week after the Players. He'd finished 55th at the Players. Sam Burns, 25th at the Players. Taylor Moore, 35th at the Players. So 54th, miscut, did not play, miscut, 55th, 25th, 35th. I am not chasing anybody that finished in the top 20 at the Players last week. That was my stance at some ridiculous time Monday morning, and I stuck by it. And actually, even if you look at players that place at the tournament afterwards, the Players, there ain't a lot of players here that were literally deep in the mire the week before at the Players. The only one I can find is Jordan Spieth, who was 14-1 second favourite last year, didn't win. He'd finished 19th at the Players. Everyone else in the, even in the positions whereby, you know, they were getting each way places, most of them either missed cut or were like 50th, 45th, 35th at the Players. So I literally stood away from any player that did reasonably well in the final leaderboard last week. I think these big championships, majors and, you know, stuff like the Players just take so much out of these guys that they either arrive at a weaker, smaller tournament, on the Wednesday afterwards, and it's kind of like, you know what, in a way, I just didn't, why did I add this to my schedule? That kind of mentality.
Yeah, I get that.
So I'm looking for players this week that are in decent nick, could do with a win. Right, I'm gonna throw this out there first. I don't know where you guys have gone for. I just know in my heart of hearts that Barry will be putting up Sepp Straka, friend of the podcast, and I don't blame him. I want to get this out there, full disclosure. I have gone 300-1, Adrien Domon de Chassard. Now, regulars will know, i.e. if you listened to this podcast last week, the only reason I am putting up Adrien Domon de Chassard is that it's FOMO bet. I've fear of missing out. I've got no idea if he plays this course very well, but I just banged half a point on him at 300-1 because we believe on this podcast that ADC, or is it DDC? No one actually confirmed what the acronym is to me. He's going to come out at some point and he's going to be some kind of player on the PGA Tour and contend for wins. Could be this week. And we were so into talking about him last week. I would just hate it if we waited for that tournament in a couple of weeks' time and actually all of a sudden you wake up on Saturday morning and he's literally in the top five on the leaderboard this week. So I thought 300-1, why not? So I'm on with William here, 8 places each way on Adrien Domon de Chassard. He actually won his Korn Ferry event the first time he ever played on the Korn Ferry Tour, he won the event. He actually did that in South Carolina, which gives me a little bit of hope that he might like these Carolina-type golf courses. Trees and not overly long and, you know, you've got limbs causing problems.
Yeah, maybe.
On dog legs. Yeah, maybe. Who knows? We'll find out when he shoots 79 on on Thursday.
The only mistake you've made is not going 2 points each way, which I have done. Let's go.
Barry's trying to.
Are you actually backing him, Barry? Or is that just a joke?
Oh, no, the bet is on. I'll send proof.
Oh, you're on?
Yeah, I put two points each way. Let's go. If we're in, we're in. You know, like, I got to make up for missing out on Scotty last week, so.
You obviously don't value that betting account, Barry, because that'll get shut down after that. That one romps him.
yeah, but
the only thing that we know, okay, you know, a lot of people can shoot me down in flames. I don't watch a lot of Korn Ferry Tour golf. Sorry, I just haven't got the time in the day. Haven't got the time in the week. Got far too much stuff going on to be sitting there watching Korn Ferry Tour highlights. Right, but on that Korn Ferry Tour last year, he went absolutely nuts. I think it was 6 consecutive top 10 finishes. Yeah. Oh, and that included the first one being a win. So he has got a character there. And I know the Korn Ferry to this is a completely different kettle of fish. However, this isn't the strongest field in the world. Yeah. Now, this isn't a major or a signature event. So maybe he's just the kind of guy that when he clicks and keeps the game together, he can contend on anything. Let's hope so. I know that he's a talent. So hopefully it continues this week. Right, where are you guys placing your bets this week quickly? Because that'll help us in terms of the flow of the podcast. What kind of areas are you at, Paul?
I've got two this week, 60 to 1 and 100 yep. to 1. You can probably guess what the 60 to 1 is.
Oh, I know who that is. Baron?
Yeah, same.
Well, okay, so those two are both on Sepp Strucker. So that takes a few minutes out of the podcast, right? Can't disagree. Great from tee to green last week. And his approach play, as I alluded to earlier, very, very strong. And actually, if you look at courses that Seb's played well on, I know I'm talking over you guys, but I'm basically just formalising what you would have said. Done well at Southwind, hasn't he? That's a great correlating course. He's done well at PGA West. There's just a number of courses here where Strucker's actually, and we just know he's a Bermuda grass monster, correct?
Yep, absolutely. East Lake, another one.
Yeah.
And really good at the Open last year, wasn't it? Second at the Open, seventh for the USPGA. So when it's a little bit tougher. Absolutely.
Yeah, and a winner of the Honda Classic.
Mm.
That we know how wind-strewn that is.
Yep.
That is the one regret. Oh, by the way, I didn't throw this in there. I've had my first Masters bet, for full disclosure. Did I do it on Friday when I was with you, Paul? I can't remember.
It was getting a bit hazy towards the end.
I don't know if I did it on Friday or did it on Thursday, but anyway, I'm on the exchange. I managed to grab 50 to 1 on Wyndham Clark. That's a crazy price.
Yeah, you won't get that now.
I do understand he's a debutant. And we do know that debutants potentially don't win the Masters. But the way that Clark's playing at the moment, I think that course will suit him down to the ground. Right, my first bet is Cam Young. 22 to 1 I got with Bet365, 8 places each way. Loves a grind, great majors record. Plays well in Florida. Also has a top three finish at Harbortown. The Salt. I don't know. I mean, jumping on JT, who hasn't won for 2 years at 14 to 1 just seems criminal. In this field?
Yeah.
You could argue that he's 14 to 1 in this field because the field is weak, but
it's still not quite right.
I just don't think he's right, so. I've gone for Cam Young at 22 to 1. You do get a lot of winners of this. I haven't seen a winner of this for quite a while, going back to Spieth, who was shorter than 25 to 1. So I don't think that 22 to 1, 25 to 1 point, that little spot in the betting is a good spot for me. And with Cam Young, you can say one thing about him. That guy must turn up every week just thinking, for God's sake, I just need to win a PGA Tour event. I wouldn't have thought he's turning up just because he's tuning up for Augusta. I thought he's thinking to himself, I think the course will suit. I might actually get a win in a weaker field.
Yeah.
The other one I've gone for, 33 to 1. This is a player that was tied second after 36 holes at the Players and then completely fell away. I read his name out in that approach data. Nick Taylor has two top 10s here. 33 to 1 I got with him. Betfred, 8 places each way on Nick Taylor. We know that two of his three tour wins have come on Bermuda grass. And this is a guy that has actually won two PGA Tour events in his last 26 outings. There's plenty above him in the betting that you can't say that about. So I was more than happy to back Nick Taylor here. He's another one. You look at Pebble Beach when it's blowing and it's horrible. He can hang around when the wind's blowing and the conditions aren't great. And I've been saying this for a while. I think Nick Taylor and the way that he's playing these days, he's jumped a level or at least one, but probably two levels in terms of the depth of his talents this year. Seems very, very good player, very motivated. I'm out to 90 to 1, chap. So do you want to fill the gap if you've got any others?
The only one for me sub 100 is Sepp Strucker. What about you, Barry?
Yeah.
Same. Yeah. I'm on the search for others at the moment, but Yeah, it's Straka and Dumont Chassard.
There were lots of players this week that I had, you know, I'm making mental notes, I'm making physical notes on players during the players, just hoping for them to kind of fall away. And not many of them did. I was really into Taylor Montgomery this week. I think this course will suit Montgomery. Did he finish 11th? No, you just can't have him. I know it sounds crazy, but just can't do it.
Steve, I do have one who I need to get sound out here. Adam Schenk.
Yeah.
19th last week, second here last year.
Yeah.
Anything come to mind on him? He's
good bet.
Good bet. Okay.
What price?
70?
Yeah, it's not bad at all. I think there's, if you're going for that area, I think the two bets are Schenk and Straka.
Schenk and Straka it is, then. 70 to 1, 8 places.
I mean, Straka, as ever, this is a guy that's in the, what is he, 26th in the world, and they're banging him up at 70 to 1.
Yeah. Doesn't get much respect, does he?
No. For some reason, I've gone for a 90 to 1 and 200 to 1s. That's where I'm at. This tournament does throw up some juicy winners, doesn't it? More at 70s. We had Sam Burns winning here at 80 to 1. Bearing in mind, these were all tour maidens. Adam Hadwin won here. I think Hadwin was 70. Is it Hadwin? Oh, Hadwin was 125 to 1. And they were all kind of similar levels in terms of their world golf rankings as well. 94, 93, 103, 123. All maidens winning their first titles. So Taylor Moore, Sam Burns the first time, Adam Hadwin. I think Kevin Streelman's in that number as well when he won here. So I've plumped for non-winners on the tour at that 90 to 101 mark. Kevin Yu must get out of bed. He's got no idea what's happening that day. He can be brilliant or he can be absolutely abysmal. But amongst miscut 58, miscut this year has been 3rd, 6th and 9th. The 9th coming just two outings ago at PGA National, the old Honda Classic. So I'm on Kevin Yu. If Kevin Yu wins a golf tournament this season, this 2024 season, he's one of those guys, you know, those second year players where you get them winning their first titles. Kevin Yu is quite close to the top of my list on that kind of ranking because he can be exceptionally good. And that Cognizant Classic, he was fourth after 36 holes and fourth after 54 holes. So it's not as if he hasn't been under the gun in PGA Tours events this year. So I'm on Kevin Yu. I've also taken, and Paul, you can show an angle on this one. I think Victor Perez is a good bet this week. 100 to 1 I got with William Hill, 8 places each way. He finished 4th last time out in Puerto Rico. He was 16th at PGA National the time before that. So he's starting to get his head around the PGA Tour. He's a 3-time winner on the DP World Tour. And they're good events that he wins, aren't they? Wasn't his first ever victory the Alfred Dunhill Links?
Yeah, it was. And given the forecast with a bit of wind and a bit of rain in it, then that's not a bad proxy, really.
I thought so. Dutch Open as well in there. And an Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship. Yeah, decent events.
Yep.
Now, for North American listeners, I know a lot of people look down their noses at the DP World Tour, but some of the events here are decent standard. And, you know, Perez has won 3 good events there in conditions that might kind of cross actually come across to this week. He's also finished in the top 4 at the WGC match play at Austin Country Club in 2021. And he also finished 12th. You mentioned this about Seb Straka. He finished 12th at that PGA Championship last year at Oak Hill. So yeah, I thought Victor Perez was a decent bet, 100 to 1. This is a guy that can actually win professional golf tournaments as well. And the other one I threw there, if we're looking at that Magic Beans kind of player, you know, a kind of Jordan Spieth light, I think Mackenzie Hughes is a cracking bet this week as well. 100 to 1 I got on Mackenzie Hughes. William Hill again, 8 places each way. The numbers that grabbed me last week, he was 11th for tee to green at TPC Sawgrass. And I was like, is this Mackenzie Hughes? And I believe he was 17th for total driving, 12th for ball striking, and 11th for tee to green. He was driving the ball ridiculously well. Like, almost 300 yards on his driving distance and dead straight. So he must be... There's something going on with Mackenzie Hughes, because this isn't a one-off either. There's been... You can just see the numbers getting better for a guy that was always around the green and putting. All of a sudden, the approach is getting better. The off the tee is a lot better. So Mackenzie Hughes in a tournament where 12 under might be very, very competitive. I fancy that. On a low GIR golf course. So those are my five. I've got Nick Taylor. I forgot Cameron Young. Kevin Yu, Victor Perez, Mackenzie Hughes, and Adrien Domon de Chassard. Any others? Paul. Not you, Paul. Barry. Are you in on any others?
No, I think I'm good for now. I want to back Joel Damon, but that's just because he's Joel Damon. I don't know if this is the right kind of place for him.
Well, Barry, the other one I have backed is Joel Damon.
Oh, fuck. And okay.
seem to be aligned.
talk me into the five for each way. Let's go.
Do you know, he opened up with Betfred's sixth place market, 150-1 yesterday. And I thought, well, I've just got to take it. But I don't know if you've been watching the new series of Full Swing 2, but there's, again, there's an episode about Joel Damon and, you know, his struggles. And when they recorded it, his game was properly in disarray once again. But seemed to have turned some kind of corner, particularly last week, 11th last week, in very good company for him at the Players. That was after he opened with a 74. Now, open with a 74, only the Open champion, Brian Harman, and the world number one, Scotty Scheffler, beat his final 54-hole title.
Yeah, I can believe that.
I saw him come on the No Laying Up post-round show. I think it was on Saturday. I can't remember which I watched a few of them, but he came on to one of them and he just said, look, that everything's a lot better now. And that people looking at Full Swing, like, that's a year ago, and they're still coming up and going, oh, are you okay? And he's like, it was a long time ago. We're good now, you know? So this is, of course, it doesn't seem like it's going to be super friendly to him in terms of the questions asked about length of approach shots. Because he's not the longest, so that's kind of what turned me off. But now I've got FOMO, so yeah, we'll throw a bet on, keep him on.
But he's got three cuts made from three attempts. He was a first round leader here on his first attempt back in 2019, so he has played the course well.
He can play this course. I think he's got a half. He's had a decent finish at somewhere like Riviera. So yeah, it's not this course fits into his wheelhouse. I'm worried about that, James. Last 36 holes, Scheffler, Harman, Siwoo Kim, 132 strokes. He's another one to keep an eye on, Siwoo Kim. As we know, do not back him anywhere unless it is Bermuda grass. Oberg, 134. Then we got Xander, Matsuyama, Joel Damon at 135. Dylan Wu, 136. Then we had Fitzpatrick, Doug Gim, Adam Schenk, and Mackenzie Hughes, all on 137. Weekend scoring at the Players. So the fact that I'm on Hughes, you're on Schenk, neither of us are on Gim, none of us are on Dylan Wu, and you're on Joel Damon, not a bad angle. A bad angle.
Potential.
Right. Should we move on? Sorry, Barry, you got one more?
No, stop me now.
He's done.
Porsche Singapore Open, a classic. Take it away.
Yes, back to Singapore for the second year in succession after we went there for the first time. It was the first time for a long time that we'd been to Singapore last year. And it's nice to see them going back for another attempt. India next week, and then they're breaking ahead of the Masters. So a couple of weeks to get our teeth into. Some interesting additions to the field this week, I must say, because we've seen a lot of very similar DP World Tour events with similar names at the top. But this week, we're headlined by Shane Lowry, 10-1. He was top 20 last week at the Players, so coming in with some reasonable form. Matthew Pavon, 14-1. Pavon, don't forget, he won the Farmers Insurance Open over on the PGA Tour earlier in the year as well. So coming in with some strong credentials. Paul Casey, 14-1, being backed in. Rasmus Højgaard, 16-1. And then you're into the normal names. Tom McKibben, 20-1. Jordan Smith, Tristan Lawrence, 25-1. 30-1 bar those players. But a relatively strong top end of the field this week. Boyle Sports, 8 places each way. A fifth of the odds are standard this week on this event. And, of course, we've got the Bet365 each way extra options running as well. So if you are looking for some additional places, then check those bookies out. Now, the course, actually, there's two courses here at Laguna National. We've got the Masters course, which hosted the championship at Laguna National. That was back in 2014. And then there's some Singapore Open events up until 2007. Then there's a classic course, the one that we're playing this week, and that hosted this venue or this tournament last year. I've included both sets of results on the stats pages this week just for reference, so you can see who's done well on either of the two courses here at Laguna National. But this one, the classic course, is 7,420 yard par 72. It's nicknamed the Beast. But last year, I mean, we played in post-monsoon conditions last year. The course was really soft, really wet. In fact, they had to stop a number of times for flooding as well. So 19 under was the winning total, and that really wasn't beastly in terms of its setup, but perhaps it'll be a bit different this year. It's built around five lakes, and the fairways are pretty generous. Paspalum from tee to green, and then Bermuda grass on the greens themselves. So slightly odd setup in that respect. Now, we are a month further into the year than last year, so hopefully it shouldn't be quite as wet, shouldn't be quite as soft, and hopefully the Beast will actually show its teeth to a certain degree. We're looking at dry and sunny conditions over the 4 days as well. Temperatures up to the mid-80s Fahrenheit, around about 29-30 centigrade, relatively light winds. So in that respect, it won't cause the players too much of a problem. But I think this course, when it's anything but sopping wet, is a little bit more of a challenge. Fingers crossed, anyway. Last year's winner was Åke Strudem. Now, Åke, if you look through his stats, he actually hit 78.
Got a laugh of Åke. We were on him the other week, weren't we?
Yeah. Well,
he was playing reasonably well.
Yeah, well, Åke does what Åke does, which is either he contends or misses the cut.
Oh, is he a Kevin Yu?
Doesn't do much in between, Steve. So, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But Åke, yeah, when he came here last year, he hit 78.6% of fairways. Now, that tells you something about the course. And ranked 22nd for driving accuracy. So if you're ranking 22nd for accuracy and you're hitting nigh on 80% of fairways, it shows you that you can find the short grass with relative ease here. What's more pertinent, I think, he was top 10 for greens in regulation, top 10 for scrambling. And for me, that's pretty key. If you look through some of the stats of the other players who performed well last year. There was also a small Asian tour event held here back in 2015. That was won by Dante Bunma. Now, he hit 87.5% of fairways. So even more, seventh on that count. So people were even ahead of him at 87% of fairways. But sixth for greens and regulation, first for scrambling. So these two kind of supplementary numbers, greens and regulation, scrambling, second shot golf course in my mind. If you can maximise one or other or both of those statistics, then I think you'll go particularly well. And those stats, again, were pretty consistent with the players that finished below Bunma back in 2015. Now, we do have strokes gained data, actually, from last year. Åke, he was second for strokes gained approach, second for strokes gained tee to green, fifth for strokes gained around the green. All of the top five finishers actually finished inside the top 14 for strokes gained tee to green, and three of the top five also finished inside the top five for strokes gained around the green. So tee to green, around the green, the two strokes gained stats, greens in regulation, scrambling from a traditional stats perspective, really quite consistent. I think if you're going to attack this from a statistical perspective, then they're the kind of cornerstones that you should use for this week. Other than that, we've not got much to work with. Got very little course experience. Oki came in off the back of two missed cuts last year, so that doesn't really help. Second place, Sami Välimäki, he came in off the back of two missed cuts as well. So there's nothing much to say in that respect. Very little course form. So, yeah, it's one of those where you're going to have to just go with your gut, I think. I'll back five. I'll rattle through them and then I'll bring you guys in at the end. I've gone towards the top of the market. I've gone for Paul Casey. Now, yesterday opened at 18 to 1, 16 to 1 was widely available. He's been heavily backed overnight, 14 to 1 right now. And I think for the right reasons, I think he should be right up there for favouritism with Shane Lowry personally. He's here on an invite. We know about Paul Casey. Back at his peak, he was top three in the world at one point. Currently ranked 832nd. And we've talked about the live situation with world ranking points, and there's been plenty of commentary and comment about it over the last few weeks and months. A win here for Casey wouldn't completely rescue that position, but it's certainly a bit of a start. And we saw a number of live players, didn't we, at the back end of last year, come over and just mop up these DP World Tour titles. Joaquin Niemann, he won the Aussie Open, didn't he? Dean Burmester, Louis Oosthuizen, both of them won twice as well. At the back end of the year, it was just a plethora of live players who were taking these titles. So
it's a huge step change, mate.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
And yeah, there's a huge step change between PGA Tour and DP World Tour. We've always said, haven't we? You've got players that are top 10, top 20 at the PGA Tour. They come down to this level, and the amount that then go on and win is amazing. And it's no different with Liv. No. How's Paul Casey actually playing on Liv at the moment?
Yeah, decent. And we were always used to Casey going over and kind of beating up these weak fields over, when he headed east back in the day when he was on the old European Tour.
Made a career of it, mate.
Didn't he? Didn't he just? Him and Westwood used to just do it every year. Recently, fifth at Liv Las Vegas last month, second Liv Hong Kong over at Fan Ling. That was in his last start. And the point with that, going back to these stats that I read through, he was first for greens in regulation in Hong Kong, second for scrambling. That's absolutely bang on the numbers that I want to see about a player performing well this week over in Singapore. Hasn't played the course. Many haven't, to be fair. Three starts in Singapore over the course of his career, though. 10th, 2nd, 16th, all at Sentosa Golf Club. Got a great chance here, I think, Paul Casey. 14 to 1, as I say, best price that's out there right now. And then I've got four longer prices. Daniel Brown at 90 to 1, I backed Brown when he won his maiden title back at the ISPS World Invitational back in August last year. And I think he looks like he's another one who could pop back up and play well, given what we've seen of him lately. Now, before he won last year, there were a load of missed cuts, and then he finished 17th at the Made in Himmerland and 7th at the Barbasol, the co-sanctioned PGA Tour event. Similar scenario this week, I think. Nothing much to start the year here, then finished 4th at the SDC Championship, 23rd last time out at Glendower. Great all-round game, 38th here last year. Second for putting average, actually, when he came here last year. So he got on reasonably well with the greens. And a better chance, I think, than the odds imply at 90 to 1. Similar price, I've also backed Ash and Wu. Again, 90 to 1. You can get slightly higher if you want to take less each way places. I've taken him 90 to 1 with 8 places each way. Now, I do back Wu quite a bit, and I've backed him, this will be the third time, I think, this year so far. But I think there's scope for him to get another win. He's won 4 times already on the DP World Tour. All of his career wins, including the ones on other tours that have been over 72 holes, all of them have come between 9 and 16 under par. And for me, that's bang in the middle of where I think the winning score is going to be this week. If I was going to put a number on it, I think maybe 14 might win this week, something like that. So that's right in his wheelhouse. Ninth at the Qatar Masters earlier in the season. 29th last time out at Glendower. Led the field for scrambling in two of his last three starts. And again, that's a number that I like to see. Leads the tour for sand staves. A lot of sand around this week. Leads the tour for sand saves for this season as well. 12th here last year. Now, last year, as I've said, it was sopping wet. He's not the longest and he's not the best in scoreable conditions. So for him to come here, finish 12th when it's playing long, playing soft, playing scoreable, I think this year should be much more to his liking, Ash and Wu. Similar price again. I've also backed Hugo Coussault at, 100 to 1 yesterday, 80 to 1. He has been nibbled in overnight, but 80 to 1 I think is still worth taking. Really impressing in these rookie season, the Frenchman. Fourth on last year's Challenge Tour rankings. Missed the cut when he played his first event in Joburg to start this wraparound season and not missed a cut since. Been really good. Runner-up in Qatar. Comes in this week off the back of a couple of top 25 finishes over in South Africa. Last three starts, 7th, 1st, 2nd for strokes gained around the green. Also putting well. I can see why he's been backed. I'm in on him too. Hugo Coussault. And finally, you mentioned a second ago, Steve, I am going to stick with Ohi Strudem, 150 to 1. I've backed him the last twice. Nothing much has happened. If I don't back him this week and he's defending his title and he does come and play well and places or potentially wins, yeah, I can't not back him. It wouldn't be reasonable for me to leave him out having backed him the last twice. And he's coming to a course where he's actually won. So 31st and missed cut those last two starts. But, I said about his driving. He's not been driving it well. 21% driving accuracy last time out at Glendower. That's not going to work. And that's why he missed the cut. But if you look at last year, he came into this. He'd missed the cut in Ras El Khaimah the week or the start before. Hit 28% of greens or fairways. So absolutely the same. Same metric, pretty much. Then came here, as I said, hit nearly 80% of fairways, won the tournament. Perhaps it all clicks. Perhaps there's something about the course that he likes. Perhaps it suits his eye or the wide dimensions of the fairways just allow him to open his shoulders and everything just seems to slot into place for him. I don't know. He has defended a title. If you have to go all the way back to the IGT Pro Tour back in 2012. And the following year, but he has defended a title in his career, so there's a little bit of evidence that he could put up a fight here. And I think 150 to 1, there's no reasonable reason for me to drop him. So I'm backed him again. Strudem, Coussault, Ashen Wu, Dan Brown, and Paul Casey, my five. Any love for the DP World Tour, Barry, this week?
I have nothing. Yeah, I'll jump on the Aki bet with you for a laugh.
It could be mad, isn't it?
20% like 20% accuracy, and then just jumps to 80%. Does he just leave the weight in the driver all the year long, and then takes it out when he gets here?
Yeah, slaps the forehead, and away you go. Yeah, no, again, it could be another missed cut, couldn't it? But you never know with Aki; he could come out of the blocks firing and. And be right up there from the very start. We shall see. What about you, Steve? Anything for you?
I've got a player here. He's finished first at the Ballantines in South Korea. First at the Indonesian Masters. This is in his career.
Yeah.
He's finished second twice in Malaysia. And he also won the Shenzhen International in 2017. So that's three wins in China, South Korea, Indonesia, and two runner-ups in Malaysia. Tends to suggest he likes travelling to these parts.
Likes it out here.
These climbs. And from what you're saying about the course, the likely target, and what you're looking for, some decent approach play, excellent around the green game. You know, all that gravitating towards decent tee to green numbers. He hasn't played since Bahrain, where he's 16th. And so far this year, he's finished 21st, 37th and 16th on his reintroduction to the DP World Tour.
I have taken 45-1 on Bernd Wiesberger.
Mm. Well capable, isn't he? Yeah, some of his around the green game or around the green stats were really pointing, really showing up this week as well. So yeah, I can see the logic. I can see the angle. Certainly seems to like it out east, given that list of successes that you've just talked through.
He clearly likes flying first class or business out to on these long haul flights out to Southeast Asia.
Mm.
So yeah, Bernd Wiesberger, my one bet.
Yeah, no, sounds like a good one.
I never mentioned in this podcast, and I should have done. How did Tom Hoagie chalk week go at the players?
Yeah, about as well as Lucas Glover. Actually, slightly better than Lucas Glover.
I think every man in the Western Hemisphere that bets or plays DK on golf was on Tom Hoagie at the players.
Mm. He started off right.
Yeah. Never take Tom Hoagie as chalk.
Mm.
I guess that's my end to the podcast 297. I hope your bets go well, chaps.
Yeah, best luck, guys.
You too, lads.
What have you got next week, Paul?
Indian Open next week.
Oh, you like that one?
Yeah, it should be a good one.
Same course?
It's the one, the DLF Golf and Country Club, the one that we've seen a few times. So not the short one, and the one that's slightly longer and crazy golf sometimes.
Oh yeah, we like that. Yeah. I've got. I think it's an event in Houston. They've brought that back in. That's the new replacement for the... Because next week would be WGC week, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes.
You with me?
Yes.
So they've brought in the Texas Children's Houston Open, which they're playing at Memorial Park Golf Course, which is that course that I managed to get Jason Kokrag at a few years ago and the one that Tony Finau won at last time out.
Okay.
So that's where we're heading for next week, listeners. I hope everyone's bets and DK teams go well. We'll be back next week. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf.